All righty, good to see you all again. The other half of you being back, that's good. Thank you, Carol, for coming in, not feeling well, and helping to fill in there. That would have been an extra interesting portion of this morning. Everyone singing a cappella the whole time through. Thank you so much for that. We are looking at the Super Brawl today. Not the Super Bowl. This is the Super Brawl, and this is the life that we face. Now, is the Christian life more like a boxing match, or is it more like a race? What?
Paul said a race.
All right. Well, let's see how that goes this morning. Keep this in mind. That's the question for the day. Now, in Hebrews chapter 10, we're jumping up again into Hebrews 11, which is the great hall of faith. We've been going through this series on the book of Hebrews. And in chapter 10, the kind of concluding words to this chapter, he says, "Do not throw away your confidence because it has great reward." And I want you to see this again and again and again over and again in the book of Hebrews, is this this notion of keep going on, keep moving on, this encouragement to get through and to keep doing what you need to be doing. And he says you have this great need for endurance in order to do God's will and so receive what is promised. And now just for a little while, and he who is coming will arrive and not delay, but the righteous one, the just one, will live by faith. And we're going to see that this... it's really neat how this thing wraps up together here. At least I think it's neat. You may not follow where I'm going with this, but it's really neat how this notion of faith and the importance of faith and the significance of faith, how it's wrapped up into this thing of this encouragement and this confidence and this endurance. And faith and endurance go hand in hand, because you cannot endure without the faith. Now, you can get through, and you can endure without the faith in some way, but you're not going to do it right. You're not going to endure in the way that he wants you to endure. There's no way, because he says you cannot please him without faith. For those who trust him, those who please God, must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So, in fact, that's what he said here in 2 Timothy 1:12. Now, we've gone through a definition of faith, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that again this morning. But just to summarize, that there are these four pillars, if you will, in a good definition for the word faith. Now, faith at its core simply means belief. But what is it you believe in? What is it that you hold as dear? And what is it you put your life on? And so you got these four components. There's persuasion. He says, "I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able." So there's also an ability, a notion of a concept that something can be done. He's able to keep what I have committed. So there's a trust component to this thing. If you're going to commit something to someone, you must trust them. And that there's also a fulfillment to him until that day. There's something that will be fulfilled. And so the two on the top, horizontally across, look at the person. Persuasion and ability, they look at who it is that you put your trust in. I put my trust in him, my faith in him, my belief in him, because he is the promise, able to make the promise come true. There is a trust and a fulfillment in that thing. So those two things work together for a good definition of faith. It's persuasion and ability, trust and fulfillment in the person and the promise. And you can't have just the person, you can't have just the promise. The two go hand in hand. Now, some promises are conditional, some are unconditional. Again, these are, I'm just summarizing, recapping from some lessons a number of weeks ago and months ago. Some promises, even physical ones, are not always fulfilled during your life. And we'll see some of those examples here in Hebrews 11. When we get to the end of Hebrews 11, he says, and all these, after this list of examples, there was this guy who did this thing, and that guy who did this thing, and this girl, and all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, i.e. they didn't get what was promised, God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us, or in other words, they would be made perfect together with us. And faith nonetheless, says, despite the fact that some are conditional, some of the promises are unconditional, some of them will not be fulfilled in your life, nonetheless, faith says, I believe God will, and leads a person to act, to function, to perform, to proceed, to live in the light of and on that belief. And that's what I hope, if you get nothing else out of this morning's lesson than that, that you'll see that faith and action go hand in hand. And you cannot truly live a life of faith without producing something. And now it's interesting enough, I think, that when you get to the book of James, for example. Now, through the years, James, there have been people that feel like James is so strong on this notion of action and works. In fact, in the book of James, he says, hey, you show me your faith, I'll show you my faith by my works. And some people have taken that so strongly that they even believe that James is not supposed to be in the Bible. Well, James is exactly opposite Paul, and he's all wrapped up in this thing of works and everything. And hopefully we'll see, we'll actually flip to James and look at some of what James is going to tell us about faith and how it relates to our life in action. And hopefully you'll understand that notion a little better. Obeying by faith ultimately means that we have to live this thing out in obedience. We reckon ourselves to be dead indeed to sin as example. Now last week we were we kind of broke up into groups and we were trying to summarize some of the different examples given to us in Hebrews chapter 11. And these were some of the things that we were looking for. And we looked at Enoch and we talked about him and we came to some conclusions about what he says in verse 6 in particular. Without faith it is impossible to please him. For you must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. And again, look, this passage as well speaks about what? The person and the promise. You must believe that he is, there's a person, and you must believe that he does what? That he rewards, there's a promise. You see that again. We looked at Noah a little bit. We talked about how Noah, he brought condemnation to the world. Well, how did Noah bring condemnation to the world? Well, he brought condemnation ultimately by living in faith, and that's what we do as well. And we live the life that is pleasing and in obedience and that is faithful. The world around us looks at us and says, wow, he's really different. And, you know, even if I'm not living faithfully, people say that about me. But they may say that in a different light if I'm living by faith, and they say, wow, that brings condemnation to me because I'm not living like that. And hopefully I've done that a few times at least. And then we didn't get to the group that was over here that was talking about Abraham, and I'm going to read. And if the group that was here wants to say something, you're welcome to when I get to the end of this. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place he would later receive as an inheritance. And he went out without understanding where he was going. By faith, he lived as a foreigner in the promised land, as though it were a foreign country, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, who were fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with firm foundations, whose architect and builder is God. You can see, without speaking for the group, you can see at least, if nothing else in this thing, there's this forward-thinking notion that goes into every one of these examples of faith. Now, Ramona, did you want to share anything? You want to be the spokesman for your group? Okay. Now, speaking of this, these were the things we were looking for. So who was it? Obviously, we're talking about Abraham. And what was it that Abraham did?
That he went out without understanding where he was going. He obeyed. He was full of faith. He lived there as a foreigner. He looked forward to the city with firm foundations.
Okay, good. And did you have any list any requirements?
Requirements of faith, choosing, action in faith, trusting and obeying. Descriptions of faith that unquestioning, while looking forward to the promise to be received, and the results of the faith, many generations or nations were formed. God acted on his behalf and was pleased. Inheritance was received. The descendants inherited the promise and results of faith.
Excellent. Very good. Did you come to any conclusions regarding universal truths?
We didn't.
That's fine. That's fine. Good job. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Sorry about that. Good. Now, what I want you to see in all this is that there is a notion, there's an action that goes with all of these, and there's a notion of something that's not yet been fulfilled. I mean, that we speak about faith. Oh, I believe that something's going to happen. And we tend to put that, and I'm going to bring you back to this over and over again, we tend to put that in real nebulous terms a lot of times. And I believe that even in these examples where it's not necessarily laid out very precisely for us or delineated to us in precise words, that if you go back and look at the examples, most of them you can see some very specific promises were given to these people. And that's what he talks about here. He says at the end of verse 9, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, who were fellow heirs of the same promise. There was a promise given, and Abraham lived in light of that promise. So there's faith or belief in the God who is able to do something, and also in some kind of promise or something that he has given to them. In other words, what the point here is, you don't just grab things out of air and say, God's going to do that for me, because God doesn't promise necessarily to do that for you. Now, going on in verse 11, by faith, even though Sarah herself was barren and he was too old, he received the ability to procreate because he regarded the one who had given the promise to be trustworthy. There it is again. He's able to do that thing. So in fact, children were fathered by one man, and this one as good as dead, like the number of stars in the sky, like the innumerable grains of sand on the seashore. So I was kind of working through the same exercise myself, and I just trying to summarize these things for you. What are the requirements? Now, I don't want to get too graphical here, but in order to live faithfully in this, in order to procreate, he had to believe, and he had to actually do something. He had to actively procreate, and there, that is an interesting notion. He was 100 years old, by the way. There are descriptions of faith that are given to us here. Faith rests on trust. You can see that. It relies on the trustworthy. It requires a conscious regard for that one. He regarded the one who had given him promise to be trustworthy. Faith had actions and measurable obedience. And faith here took quite some time to produce results. Now, he got impatient, as a matter of fact. And I don't know, it doesn't really give us enough details in the storyline to know at what point in time if he was proactively working towards this, and then things weren't going, Sarah wasn't becoming pregnant, and then he says, well, maybe Hagar will work out, or if he just hadn't acted in obedience until he got to some point, whatever it was, but at some point in time, no matter how you look at it, it took some time for the promise to come true, and yet it did come true. Now, after Isaac was born, what were the results of that? Well, it ultimately brought about, obviously, immeasurable and all that, but there was a strength and resolve and additional faith you see from that. Because what happened, Isaac gets to be so old, and then God says, okay, it's time to sacrifice your son. And he takes him up, and of course he says in that regard, he says, well, I know that somehow this promise is still going to hold true. And I don't know how that works out, but evidently he believed that God's going to raise Isaac up from the dead. And so his strength was increased. And this is what happens for you and I as well. And we're going to talk about that circle and how these things build in our lives. And we start out with a little bit of faith, and we go through the experience, and we have experienced things and strengthens through experience. Now, I'm not going to take the time to go through the details of each one of these examples in the rest of Hebrews 11. I'm just going to, honestly, just going to kind of read through them, and we get to the conclusion at the end of 11 and 12 is where I'm trying to head with this thing, and I'll leave those as exercises for you to do. And we'll come back and flesh out some of this more in the coming weeks, but I'm going to kind of rush through this if you don't mind. These all died in faith without receiving the things promised, but they saw them in the distance and welcomed them and acknowledged that they were strangers and foreigners on the earth. For those who speak in such a way make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. In fact, if they had been thinking of the land that they left, they would have had opportunity to return. This is an important notion about faith, by the way, is that sometimes you just, You have to kind of turn your feet and go that way. And you say, you know what? It looks like it's not going to work out. And I'm just going to go back home. And if you've got home on the brain, if that's what you're thinking about, where you came from, and we all have that tendency. Oh, back in the good old days. I remember when it was, you know, oh boy, things were better back then. And for some reason, when you were back then, you were looking forward to something new. But when you get to the forward, then you start thinking the back was better. And I don't know why that works that way, but it does. And the more you begin to think about how it was better back there, the more likely you are to start kind of turning that way. And before you know it, you're running back home. And you're not going to get what it is that ultimately you should have gotten to. But as it is, they aspire to a better land, that is a heavenly one. And this is the key. We have to realize, recognize, and keep in the forefront of our mind that promise is better than the going back thing. And it's so easy to say, man, this is tough. It's going to be easier just to give up. And he says, no, just stick with it. You may never see the results in your lifetime. But if we can keep in the forefront of our mind the significance and the betterness of that, we'll get there. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And you'd have to say, what's the opposite of this? If you don't do what they said, if they hadn't, at least keeping it in their terms, if they had not aspired to the better land, if they had turned tail and gone back home, then what would God be ashamed to be called their God? Now, those are harsh words. I mean, you know, I hope I never say I'm ashamed to be called, you know, Tally's father. I hope I never say that. You know, my dad probably said that a few times about me, but anyhow, I heard that every week as a matter. No. But that's not a place, that's not a thing you want to hear, right? And so this is something that we want to continue to keep in the forefront of our mind. Moving on in Hebrews 11:23, by faith when Moses was born, his parents had hid him 3 months because they saw the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Now, I'm really glad Moses was beautiful, by the way, because evidently if he was ugly, they would have gone ahead and let him kill him. Because it says they saw that he was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. So it's a good case for wanting to have beautiful children. And just if they're not beautiful, go ahead and, you know, let nature take care of things for you. By faith, when he grew up, Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be ill-treated with the people of God than to enjoy a sense of fleeting pleasure. We could speak all about that and the sacrifices we have to make in those regards. He regarded abuse suffered for Christ to be greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for his eyes were fixed on the reward. Again, looking forward, running the race, keeping the eyes fixed forward. And there are so many race analogies in the New Testament, but even in the book of Hebrews here, you can't help but see that this, you know, when you're running a race, again, if you turn to the left, turn to the right, begin to look back, you're going to get off the track and you're going to move off the track and be defeated. By faith, he left Egypt without fearing the king's anger, for he preserved as though he could see the one who is invisible. There it is again. Even though we don't see it, even though we can't see the end result, we know who God is and we know the kind of God he is, and we know that we should resolve to keep looking that way even though you can't see it. And we have to just at some point in time say, I don't see it, I don't get it, I don't know what good is going to come from this thing, but I trust him and I'm going to pretend like I can see it and live that way. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood so that the one who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith, they crossed the Red Sea as if on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried it, they were swallowed up. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the people marched around them for 7 days. Now, when you read that, you go, well, gosh, though even the walls had faith. Well, obviously, not the walls had faith. But who was it that had faith here? The people who marched around them for 7 days. And again, the ludicrous nature of walking around walls to try to defeat a city. It doesn't make sense. I can walk around these walls until I'm blue in the face. And the walls aren't... This is no way to fight a battle. Joshua, there's a better way to do this. And he said, no, just walk. And by the way, be quiet. And don't talk. And the walls will come tumbling down. And they did. And by faith, Rahab the prostitute. In fact, he didn't even tell him that, by the way. He didn't tell him, hey, if you just walk around these things. You know, sometimes, if I just know the end result ahead of time, it's easier for me. Now, you know, if you take your child to the doctors, and they go to the hospital, and they're some kind of emergency, and they need a shot or something. And if they've never been to a hospital, it's overwhelming, and there's medical equipment and people coming and going, and there's people crying in the background, and it's just terrifying for a child for the first time to be there. And so you sit down, and if the doctor comes in, and he's not normally a pediatric, maybe, and he kind of comes in, he's like, well, we're going to give the child a shot, and he's like, hold the kid down, we're going to get it in there, or bend him over, and the kid's like terrified, and it's just shrieking. Now, I've seen that kind of experience. And then the other hand is, the doctor comes in, and it's just, well, let me tell you what's going on, here's what we're going to do, and kind of gives him a heads up ahead of time, and you can just see that. Like, oh, this is going to be all right. And sometimes it probably doesn't work, right? But it's probably more often than not more beneficial to at least give them a heads up. In this, sometimes you get the heads up and it helps you get through the deal. Sometimes you don't get it. God doesn't give you exactly what's going to go on. He just says, I want you to walk around 6 times, and on the seventh day, walk around, and then trust me. And then the walls came tumbling down. By faith, Rahab, the prostitute escaped the destruction of the disobedient because she welcomed the spies in peace. Again, not knowing necessarily. And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon. And you're going, phew, thank God. Because God had told us more about that, then he'd be going on about it. We would be getting out of here not in time for lunch. Will fail me if I tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and the prophets. Through faith they conquered kingdoms and administered justice and gained what was promised, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the raging fire, escaped the edge of the sword, gained strength and weakness, became mighty in battle, put foreign armies to flight. By this time, if we were in a black church, I'd be getting amen all over the place. And amen, brother! And women received back their dead, raised to the life. Hallelujah! But others were tortured, not accepting release to obtain resurrection to a better life. And others experienced mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, sawed apart, murdered and with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, and they were destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and caves and openings in the earth. And these all were commended for their faith. Yet, they did not receive what was promised. So, no matter how terrible it was, no matter how much faith they had to keep plodding along, even though they never got, most of them, what had been promised to them in their life. For God had provided something better for us so that they would be made perfect together with us. They didn't get it then, they get it in the future. We can kind of summarize the different ways that this happened through that passage. We've seen this before, and I'm not going to take the time to look at that. We get to Hebrews 12. This is where I want to spend the rest of the time. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, and I want you to see two summarizing words here. Therefore, and that would have been enough to make us go back and see these cloud of witnesses, but then he says since. So therefore and since. In other words, take note. This is important. What these people did was presented there for us. And we have a great witness. We have a great cloud of witnesses. And therefore we must get rid of every weight and the sin that clings so closely and run with endurance the race set out for us. Now, if this isn't a race metaphor from the Olympics, I don't know what is. In those days, how did they run? Well, they had Nike shoes. Actually, they didn't have Nike. They had Adidas. And that's it. Well, you got to protect your feet. And everything else, they were running naked as a jaybird. And the reason for that was they got rid of every weight and the sin that clings so closely. Now, I've seen people running on the track, and they get pretty close to this these days. But, you know, most people at least have some clothes on, which is good. But if you really want to run the race, this is how you do it. And I would not necessarily suggest taking your clothes off, but you do want to remove all hindrances and weights and snares and the things that are going to keep you from running the race. How? With endurance. Now, if you're running a sprint, probably having the clothes on, having the weights is not as much of a factor. I don't know. But, you know, that little bit of weight that you carry, that 1 pound of weight or whatever it is that you carry with you, the longer the race is, the more that 1 pound is going to bear on you. It's going to cause resistance for you. Now, in the summer, before it started getting cold out and I got all wimpy, I was riding my bike with my dad on Saturdays. And, you know, there's people out there that have like these, you know, $8,000 bikes and they have like, you know, $400 clothes, outfits on. And my first thought was, man, you know, and the bike I have, my dad gave me, which is a real nice bike and everything. But I was thinking, man, you know, it wouldn't make any difference if I had a lighter bike or more expensive clothes, actually, because I've got at least 30 pounds right here. So what difference is it going to make to save me 4 ounces on my bike if I've got an extra 30 pounds? It's not going to make any difference at all. And so I'm not a very good example of that, but that 30 pounds, on the other hand, I take that with me, you know, for 5 miles, and at the end of that thing, I'm... And, you know, there are like 65-year-old women passing me up. And that's, and they're not even, you know, connected to a car or anything. That's just wrong. But I've got the weight, see, and I can tell you about the significance of the weight. And if I didn't have the 35 pounds or 40 or 50 pounds or whatever it is I have on me, I'd be beating those 65-year-old women, I'm sure of it. At least if I was holding onto a car, I'd be beating them. Now, we have to run with endurance the race that's set before it. It is a long distance race. And you don't, in a long distance race, there are times when you kind of pick it up. But what you really want to do in a long distance race is you want to preserve your energy and have a constant run as much as possible all the way through. And if anything, you pick it up at the very end. Now, I do know something about somewhat long distance races. I've never run a marathon or anything of that nature, but I ran cross country when I was in high school. And when we practiced for cross country, the goal was really, you know, you would run for, 5 miles to get to some point, and you would time yourself. And I was... This is what killed me about running. I was always watching my watch and seeing how much I'm doing, you know, constantly counting my steps and everything. But you get out to some point and you know you've gone half the way, and then you turn around and come back, and you want to get back in a lesser time than what you got out there. Now, when you're sprinting, you don't have to worry about that. You just go as fast as you possibly can for that whole period of time. And the endurance race, though, is one in which you have to have a steady pace. And we get discouraged as Christians, as believers in our race, because sometimes we get passed up by people that are sprinting in the middle of their race. And sometimes we get hindered by things that slow us down. And sometimes we just don't feel like we can keep going on through the race. We saw, what's it called, Facing the Giants. Now, anybody seen that movie, Facing the Giants? Really, 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 really bad acting. But it was made by a church, and which is pretty impressive. I'm thinking that when we get the walkthrough done, that we'll probably be out there at Blockbuster too. I don't know, but it was a neat movie, because even though it had really bad acting and everything, the whole premise of this thing was really focusing on not winning the game, but focusing on Christ and transforming our lives and being a witness for Him, and living for Him and living the life for Him. And in that movie, there's a scene where this guy has got a got these big muscular arms. You know, he's got to get down on his hands, without not his knees, just on his hands. And there's a guy on his back, and he's blindfolded, and he's got to walk all the way as far as he can. And his goal is to try to make it to the 50-yard line. And the coach is there while he's walking like this. You can do it. Don't stop. Don't stop. Keep going. Keep going. Push. Push. Don't. Give me your best. Give me your best. Give me your best. And when he's done, he's exhausted. I must have made it 50 yards. And the coach says, you made it to the end zone. And the end, what? Yeah. The end. You made it to the end zone. You're there. And it's all exciting, inspiring. And that's when it's when you find out for the first time you made it to the end zone. And that's the life. He is right there with us, and he's encouraging us, and he's telling us, don't give up, don't give up, don't give up. And keep your eyes fixed on him, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. Now notice, or the author and the finisher is another translation there. I love this translation because pioneer is probably a better suited word for it than author. But either one, it gets the same kind of notion across, and that is one who either writes the book and you read it, or the one who goes out ahead and you follow him. It's the same idea. Lewis and Clark were pioneers, and they made paths that people could follow. And people knew how to get across to the West because of them. And we know how to get across our divide because of the one who's gone before us. He's written the book, and he's been an example for us. But he's also a perfecter. He's a completer, the finisher of our faith. We live the life in faith. That's the whole thing was in Hebrews 11 was, this is how you do it, by faith. But he's going to perfect it for us. And we get to see that in the end. I better keep moving. For the joy set out for him, he endured the cross. Now, if you don't see anything else, at least get this. I think I already said that this morning, so that's two things you got to get. But he endured. See this word of endurance. He endured the cross, regarding its shame, and has taken a seat at the right hand of the throne. Think of him who endured such opposition against himself by sinners, so that you may not grow weary in your souls and give up. You have not resisted to the point of bloodshed in your struggle against sin. Now, I know Clyde has preached on this, and he said something about this not resisting the point of bloodshed. And for the life of me, I couldn't find the lessons on the website. I kept looking that up, and I could never remember what it is he said about it. So I thought, well, hopefully I don't say anything opposite what he said. But so here we go. Now, I don't remember what he said exactly. I know it was very different than what I always thought about when I read that passage. Now, when you read this passage, forgetting what you probably do remember what Clyde said, but forgetting what you may remember about that, or just when you read this, what do you think of? The first thing that comes to your mind, not resisting to bloodshed. What? Okay, we haven't died on the cross, or we haven't died. We haven't been. I think of martyrdom. I think, hey, look, it's tough, yeah, but you haven't been killed. You haven't died for Christ, right? And so that's my your first inclination when you read this. But resisted. Let's look at a couple words here. Resisted, to stand in opposition against, in line of battle, to stand face to face. It is literally to stand in the face of against. It is facing opposition. Okay? Keep that in mind. Now, the second word, struggle. The word struggle here, and it just means to strive or to struggle, which is, I said to strive or to strive. I mistyped that. It's to strive or to struggle. But notice the Greek word. It's antagonizomai. What does that sound like? Antagonistic, antagonize. That's where we get our word from. It is, we've got this antagonistic one that we are resisting. Now, what is it we are antagonizing against? We're antagonizing against sin. You have not yet resisted the point of bloodshed in your struggle. This is really interesting. When you look at the Greek order of this, the sentence is actually backwards. And I have no idea why the translators did this one to us. I understand it sometimes. But you got to reverse it. It really says, in your striving and struggling against sin, you have not resisted to the point of bloodshed. This bloodshed is not martyrdom. That may be the ultimate bloodshed. But that's not what he's talking about. This is a term from pugilism. How do you like that word? What's pugilism? Anybody? What? Who knew that? All right. It's always someone has to ruin it for you. Leave it to your parents, of course. Yeah, pugilism is boxing. This is a boxing phrase. This is straight out of boxing. He's giving us an analogy of racing and boxing at the same time. This is Olympics for you. This is the Super Brawl, right? This is the fight that we're in. Now, you are striving, you are struggling, you are resisting, you're face to face. Now, I'm in karate, all right? Now, in karate. All right, come on, Billy. Where's Billy? No, I'm just kidding. Now, all right, Abby. No, you see that. Now, in karate, we our form of karate, you fight side, right? Right? Not face on, okay? And I'm not going to do any karate moves because I'll embarrass Colleen. But, I'll embarrass myself, to be honest with you. But you don't square off. You're sideways like this. In boxing, however, you face off. Not, you know, you don't do that in karate because you kick as well. And so if you're doing this, you're protecting your face, but you kick someone in the gut, right? So you kind of, okay, I did a karate move, but it was a small one. Now, but here you can kind of you're protecting yourself, right? In boxing, you're only using your hands. And so you face off your enemy. Now, what is your enemy? Sin. Your enemy is not the people around you. It's not sometimes it's the people in the church, but usually not. It's not the world around. It's sin is your enemy. And how do you fight sin like that? Well, interesting from the analogy of boxing. I went back and did a little bit of research on boxing in ancient Greece. And there are some rules in that. There are no holds or wrestling allowed in that, which is, a lot of these rules are very similar to today's rules. And by the way, the boxer back then, they boxed pretty much naked as well, which that's really odd to me. But anyhow, they didn't wear gloves. They just wrapped their hands in like a leather strap. And the key there is if you don't wrap yourself, your hands, even boxers stay usually wrapping tape before they put their gloves on, because it has to keep their bones together. If you let your bones spread out a little bit, the impact will break your hands. But they would wrap their hands in a leather kind of a strap. Sometimes they'd have a kind of a strap along here that they could wipe the sweat off their brow, because their matches would go for a long time sometimes, unless they got knocked out. But in this boxing, there's no hold or wrestling. And I just drew a few analogies from the Christian life of this. There are, for us, you've got to resist sin. You avoid it. You keep a distance from it. You don't wrestle with sin. You don't do this to it ever. In boxing, you're not allowed to do that. And in sin, you're not supposed to grasp it either. In boxing, any type of blow with the hand was allowed, but no gouging with the fingers. With our fight against sin, it's any and all possible legal means you fight against it. And by the way, sin's not going to regard too many rules against you, so it's going to get nasty. There were no rounds or time limits in their boxing. They just went. And it's like that for our life as well. There's no rest periods. There's no time limits. There's no ring that was used, I thought was interesting. And there are no limitations in physical space for us as well. You know, you can sin here just as well as you can sin at home, and I've seen it. Victory was decided when one fighter gave up or was incapacitated. And victory over sin ultimately occurs when the last enemy, death, is defeated. There were no weight classes. Opponents were selected by chance. I get that on when we spar at karate. Sometimes I'm against the little girls, and some of the little girls have kind of whipped up on me. But, you know, sometimes I beat the girls. And but there, my weight is inhibiting me. See, when I get that down. And then sometimes I get the bigger, the guy that's like 6'4", and his legs just go like that. And that's just not right either. So I'm trying to I'm trying to figure out some how to be like a girl when I fight them. I don't know. But there are no weight classes, and you never know what sin you'll be fighting next. Judges enforce the rules by beating offenders with a switch. And we have a judge as well, but there are no judges for sin. For them, it's anything goes. And fighters could opt to exchange blows undefeated if the fight lasted too long. If you get I'm tired of fighting, man, so we're just going to take turns. And you're going to hit me a few times, and then I'm going to sit back and I'm going to hit you a few times. Well, you never want to do that with sin. You never want to get there. And your fight with sin will only last as long as you do. You can't afford to fight that one undefended. I thought this was really interesting. The guy by the name of Seneca was living around the time the New Testament was written. He was a Greek philosopher. And he's a Roman philosopher, actually. He said, "The athlete who hath seen his own blood, and who, though cast down by his opponent, does not let his spirits be cast down, who as often as he hath fallen down, risen the more determined, goes down to the encounter with great hope." Now, we don't want to get our too much of our lesson from a Greek or Roman philosopher, but he was pretty right on here with the Christian life. We sometimes you do resist even to the point of bloodshed. You're boxing against sin, and you may even bleed. But what are you supposed to do? You see your blood, you go, that's it, I give up. No, you keep going on, and that even to some extent it should motivate you even the more. You get cut up sometimes, and you'll lose those matches, but don't let that stop you from fighting. Say, okay, Lord, I missed this one. Next time we'll go around further. My brothers and sisters, turning to James. Now this is I got most of my next lesson done already because I'm way behind. My brothers and sisters, consider it nothing but joy when you fall into all sorts of trials, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect effect, so that you will be perfect and complete, not deficient in anything. That sounds a whole lot like what we just read in the book of Hebrews regarding our need for endurance. I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to stop here. I'm going to go one more slide here. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, we have to run with endurance. He got this example. The joy was set before him. He endured. Think of him who endured such things as you struggle and strive against this. And in Hebrews 10, we already saw this. Do not throw away your confidence, because it has great reward, for you need endurance in order to do God's will and so receive what is promised. We are fighting this fight. Now, I asked you the question, is this more like a boxing match or is it more like a race? And it's really kind of a combination. And I thought it was interesting that there are no... in the Greek form of boxing, there was no ring. Now, I don't know. There must have been some limitation as to where you could go, because they had to be able to watch it. So you're probably the whole stadium. But you can imagine the guys running around the whole stadium boxing, right? I mean, I chase the guy all over the place. And this is something that's interesting in karate. When you're fighting people, there are people that they just keep going like this, you know. And then they get out of the ring, and they got to push back in the ring. Well, when you're boxing against sin, you got to keep moving forward, and try not to do this. And it's just like the race. So you're boxing and you're moving and you're going and you keep going and 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 keep going. And sometimes you just don't see how it's going to resolve itself. But we have endurance, and we will receive what is promised. And I promise to pray and let you out of here now. Lord, thank you for your grace. Thank you for who you are, what you've done in our lives, the example that you've already given us, enduring to the point of death yourself on the cross. Thank you for the grace you give us to live daily, the mercies that are new every day. And we fail, we forget, we don't keep our eye on the prize all the time. But I pray that you will give us the encouragement that we need. Help us to encourage one another to do that, and to live a life that is pleasing for you. And I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.